Hi, friends. It is Monday, June 13th. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. Thanks for listening to RBN and to this program. To listen to previous programs on RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org. A subscription to the archives is only $1.33 per month. A friend graciously created a Spingola Speaks YouTube channel, then YouTube, in conjunction with Bertelsmann, a company with connections to Israel, complained about the copyright issues regarding the music, which is actually in the public domain. Although I regularly use that music, YouTube banned 7 videos, those dealing with Israel. My friend removed the music from those videos and created another YouTube page. Now I have 2 links at Spingola.com, one for snippets of the programs YouTube allows, and another link for those that YouTube and their collaborators censored because of content. Since December 11, 2008, YouTube and the Anti-Defamation League, ADL, have had a cozy partnership to silence people who oppose tyrannical policies. We will take calls after my guest has presented his information when we open the phone lines in the second hour at 800-313-9443. Today, Randall Tillotson is co-hosting with me, and our guest is Jim Stone. Jim's website is jimstonefreelance.com. Jim has written an article, linked on my radio schedule page, entitled, Did the Dimona Dozen Murder the Fukushima 50? Fukushima may in fact have been caused by an act of war under the cover of an environmental disaster. Okay, who have we got? Is Jim with me? Is Randall?
Yes, I'm right here.
How about Randall?
I'm here.
Okay, super. Okay. Now, this is actually the 4th article that states this earthquake was not natural and that someone used nukes. Ken Adachi, Z.J. Livingston, and Ben Fulford have also made similar claims. Now, I have attached, Jim, your article and the links that you use to substantiate your claims on my radio schedule page so people can kind of follow along. Let me just give a quick brief. Randall Tillotson worked in the technical side of the cable television industry in Canada for about 30 years. He also worked as a volunteer broadcaster on a radio station in Vancouver and sometimes worked on an evening public affairs program for about 3 years. He moved back to the States about 10 years ago and now lives in the Ozark Mountains in northwest Arkansas. Okay, we do have to take a 3-minute break. We will come back, and then, Jim, you can tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we will get to your article. So stay tuned. We'll be back in 3 minutes. All righty. Welcome back, friends. Today, Randall Tillotson is co-hosting with me, and our guest is Jim Stone. Jim, tell us a little bit about yourself and about this article.
Yeah, I apologize for not sending you a bio. So I'm gonna read it. I just spaced it off. Jim Stone has worked for the National Security Agency with an above top secret clearance specializing in electronic warfare. He also has extensive experience in an automated industrial control system, as well as extensive background in computers and advanced electronics. He has dedicated his life to exposing the works of the elite from a technology standpoint, and has achieved a unique status which enables him to commit a vast amount of time and research to complex and demanding subjects. So that's basically who I am, and I am here to discuss the events leading up to Fukushima and offer a well-researched opinion on what the future holds for Fukushima, Japan, and the rest of the world.
Okay. Where did you say you worked? Who did you work for?
It was the National Security Agency. I've worked many places, but in my bio, it's the National Security Agency. That's the NSA.
Okay.
Which, so, I have, this morning I got a really, really good report from my Japanese correspondent. I'm not going to name him because, he hasn't given me permission yet to name him, and I don't think he wants to be named because it's pretty risky to be doing a report like this, especially if you're just an individual. You know, I have a little bit of protection because I've got some pretty good exposure. And it's a really, really, really interesting feedback. He answered a lot of questions that I had. And first off, he starts out saying, I tried to send an email, but it wouldn't go through. And this happens a lot now. My emails are getting blocked a lot. This correspondent happened to be in Kobe, or in Osaka, which was very close to Kobe, when that earthquake hit, which is one that I referenced in my article. And he was in Fukushima when the earthquake hit there. And his comment was, the Kobe earthquake was big, and the 311 one was bigger, but not more than 100 times bigger. You are right. And I have no doubt the earthquake was not natural. That's why I found your site. And he goes on to explain that there were chemtrails in the sky around the time of the earthquake, and that 2 days before the big one on March 9th in the early afternoon, he was in a doctor's office with his dad, who was in a wheelchair. And he says, I was standing there and felt dizziness. I looked up at the ceiling and found things were swaying. Nobody said it was a quake. I would explain it as standing on a big wobbling top. It was slow and not vertical or horizontal. It was a magnitude 7.4. I'm very sensitive about quakes. Sometimes I can predict quakes. Not right now. There's too many quakes. I have been feeling the big quake would come soon, so 3.9 made me off guard. Well, the thing is that this quake was something that he had never felt, and he's very experienced with quakes, and I have a suspicion that the reason why it felt gooey the way it was is because it was being artificially triggered, and he gets onto that. I also asked him a question about a big medical team that was ready to go right when the tsunami hit, and from Israel. And he said, a big medical team came with lots of equipment and went to the north. He left those equipment as a gift for evacuees. I thought it was very interesting, so I remembered it. In other words, why would he think it was interesting if, you know, are you there right now?
Yeah, sure. I'm just
okay.
This
the line is really silent. Okay. So he noticed that the Israelis had a disproportionate response early on. And then getting down to the bottom.
How did he notice all these things?
He lives in the area. He's in the Fukushima area. I have been checking the USGS regularly and noticed that there are lots of depth 10-kilometer quakes. The 311 one, and then he said there's another one on 411, both are a depth of 10 kilometers. Do you have any idea what this means? Scalar weapon, harp, or just coincidence? He thinks that all these quakes are being synthetically triggered because they're not like normal quakes in Japan. And he said that there's so many of them that people are like getting seasick in Japan right now. So that's the feedback for this morning from him. And he's very, very suspicious of what went on. I'm going to get on to the regular presentation.
All righty. Okay, now on your website, you have 3 points. Well, you actually have several points, but let's try and stick to the website.
Okay.
So that our listeners can also kind of see where we're at. But let's start with number one, and you talk about reactor number three.
Yeah, if you click on link number one and the reference link, and I also have a different page of links, but you'll see that there's a nice high-resolution photo that has a diagram of the Mark I containment and reactor system. And if you look at this picture, which is I managed to get my hands on some classified photos out of Fukushima early on, and I knew that there was a major problem because reactor 3 is completely gone. When you look at these photos of the Mark 1 containment diagram, and then you look at what's left of reactor 3's containment structure, the reactor is completely missing. Now,
Now you say you have a links page. I also have that attached to the radio schedule page.
Yes,
and,
and
which link are you talking about? Number three?
It would just be gemstonefreelance.com/links.html.
Okay, so you're on number one, the vanished reactor, correct?
Yes, yes. Now, if you look at this, early on, I didn't know what to make of this. I figured that the reactor probably had a shell blown away or whatever, but now, after thinking about this for a while, I think what happened is that the structure around the reactor got destroyed and it lost support and fell down into the hole below. If you look in the diagram, there's an empty space underneath the reactor. I think it's probably actually down in there. So it's probably still on site. But this, what's important about this picture is that the media is still talking about containment at reactor 3 and pressures and temperatures at reactor 3. This proves that they're lying because there is no containment at reactor 3, and if it fell down into that torus, all the pipes are ripped loose. There's absolutely no way they can be getting readings out of this reactor.
Can I say something there about what I saw an interview with Arne Gundersen yesterday, and he's saying that at this point he thinks that the reactor core is actually burnt right through into the basement, and he doesn't know how far down it's gone, but they're reading radioactive material in hot material, he's calling it, which are radioactive particulates in Seattle.
There's no doubt that happened. That's beyond doubt. I am kind of shunning Arne Gundersen. Despite what he has said, he's got very, very thin credentials.
Really? What do you base that on?
They're very thin. Based on feedback from his own community, there's a possibility that Arne Gundersen came to be after a Spider-Man comic in 1990. He could be a psyop. I've got a link to that. It's link number 34.
You'll have to prove that one. I don't buy that.
Well, then
anyway,
I've got a link to feedback on his peers. It's link number 33. And his other nuclear engineers have a major complaint against Arne Gundersen making ridiculous claims that can't possibly be true. But as far as the reactor melting through and being in the bottom, yes, that is absolutely true. My main beef with Arne Gundersen is not that he's saying that it's worse than it is. I think he's not saying how bad it really is. I think that he's holding back and or he's not really briefed on the situation as well as he should be.
I don't know about that either because a couple of days ago I saw him interviewed and he said that the reactor number 3 actually had a nuclear detonation. So you can't have a detonation of a nuclear reactor unless it's got a highly enriched uranium in it. So
let's get to oh my goodness, they don't have
a okay. Let's forget Arne Gundersen for the time being, and let's go on to your points here.
Yeah, if you go to if you scroll down to the bottom of the vanished reactor image, you will see there is a company from Israel named Magna BSC that got a security contract at Fukushima prior to this disaster, and Japan had offered to enrich uranium for Iran. 4 months later, this group from Dimona showed up at Fukushima, getting full access to the facility, and they installed a camera inside of Reactor 3's containment that was sized and proportioned exactly like a gun-type nuclear weapon. If you scroll to the bottom of the...
Jim, hold that thought. We do have to take a three-minute break. We will be right back in 3 minutes. All right, welcome back, friends. Today, Randall Tillotson is co-hosting with me, and our guest is Jim Stone. And, Jim, you were talking about the camera.
Yes. Magna VSP is a security company that is based in Dimona, Israel, where Israel manufactures its nuclear weapons. It's former, prior to being in Fukushima and getting these security contracts, its only history was working for the Israeli Defense Forces. And I feel that, given the size and shape of this camera, they brought in a 1,000-pound camera that was exactly the same shape and design of a gun-type nuclear weapon. You can see the diagrams that I've got on the bottom of the page. And the whole reason
Where did you find the weight? I tried to investigate those links you had on that camera, and I couldn't find anything.
Well, it's based upon the weight of a gun-type nuclear weapon. And if you look at the bottom of that camera,
Look
underneath it. Look underneath camera.
But wait a minute. You can't say it's based on a gun-type nuclear weapon's weight. I mean, the camera could be made all out of aluminum for what we know.
If you look at that base, it's designed to be picked up by a forklift. That camera sitting on that base is a solid, at least a quarter inch to a half inch base that's been welded or bolted together. The thing is very crude. You can look right at that thing, and it's obviously not a camera. That is,
where's the picture?
It's down at the bottom. If you click on the first link, it's down at the bottom of that picture.
Okay.
And this
right down
is
at the bottom,
reason for the
prompt
criticality.
Huh? Okay, I see it. Okay.
You cannot get a prompt criticality that produces a nuclear-style blast out of reactor fuel. I have spoken to GE.
There could be another reason for that. If you disregard your hypothesis, there's another answer to that.
And what is it? 20% nuclear fuel going off like nuclear bombs?
No. In fact, this is one of your own links that was at the bottom of your article page. It's an article by Yuichi Shimatsu about questioning whether or not the Japanese government had a secret nuclear weapons facility there at Fukushima. Mm-hmm. We've got to look at the history of Israel, the Israeli government helping other countries get their nuclear weapons program going. And one of the countries is South Africa. They had a secret nuclear weapons program, and then bingo, all of a sudden, we've got the bomb. Now, it could be just as easily that Japan was working secretly with Israel, and the earthquake hit, and bingo, they had an accident. And so some of their material blew up. I mean, there was a detonation there. So
yeah.
To say it was a nuclear device that was placed by Israeli company, I'm not buying
material.
That.
You cannot have nuclear material go off unless it is precisely calculated and brought together in a very precise way. This is impossible inside a fuel pool. This is impossible inside a reactor.
We don't know if they were constructing a bomb, or we don't know. We have no idea what was going on there. It's all a big secret.
You cannot, unless they actually set off their own bombs and their own reactor containment, this doesn't make any sense. So you're trying to say that underneath this reactor, they had a nuclear weapon and it went off. I'm not saying that.
I'm saying that's a possibility. I mean, in Dimona...
It's very implausible. It's very implausible. We have a picture of a gun...
Well, that's what Dimona is. They've got a nuclear weapons factory right underneath their nuclear reactor there in Dimona. They won't let anybody in there.
But we have a picture of a gun-type nuclear weapon that got installed inside of Reactor 3's containment.
Well, wait a minute. You're calling it a gun-type nuclear weapon without having any evidence, though. You're saying it's a gun-type nuclear weapon, and you're comparing it to a picture of one, of a diagram of what a gun-type nuclear, I mean, almost little boy, what was dropped on Hiroshima or Nagasaki, one of the two, that used a gun-type trigger device. So that's a pretty common deal. But you can't extrapolate and say, this is a nuclear weapon. You can't
do
that. You're not providing any evidence. Where's your evidence?
Do you have an explanation for the explosion at reactor 3? I mean at reactor 4. Arnie Gunderson said the fuel pool had a front criticality. Well, how did that one explode? Because TEPCO had that reactor completely disassembled. How did we get an explosion
there?
Well,
now, how do you know that? You haven't provided any evidence of that either.
Yes, I did. I linked to that so well. I am so well documented on that one. I actually got
I couldn't find it. You just got a picture of a cover off a nuclear reactor with
area.
The bolts out.
That reactor is disassembled. TEPCO was replacing the stainless steel shroud.
Okay, you didn't provide any evidence that I saw. That you know, you haven't got anything with
you
the date.
You obviously didn't go and look at the read the article then. The article has all that information in it.
Okay, fellas, let's back away into your corners here. We do have to take another 3-minute break, and we will be back. And let's get back and talk about your article. And we'll be back in 3 minutes. Stay tuned. Friends, Randall Tillotson is co-hosting with me, and our guest is Jim Stone. And so that you can actually see what we are talking about, see the diagrams and whatnot, you can go to spingola.com, click radio schedule, go down to this date, and I have everything linked. I have Jim's link page, which has several of the links, and I also have his article linked. So you do need to be looking at these diagrams, and I know that I tend to be very skeptical. Just because the media tells us something has happened does not mean that I actually believe it or that it actually did happen. And so I'm rather skeptical also when somebody shows me a diagram. I'd like to know, you know, okay, so where did this diagram come from? What is the source of it? And, you know, I'm just a skeptical person. That's just my nature. Jim, please continue.
Okay, let's go to link number 13. Reactor 4's dome was removed for defueling. And in this link, you will see that reactor 4's dome is off. And that dome, and this is at least empirical proof that TEPCO was honest when they said that reactor had its core removed. I mean, what else are you going to go by? And if the reports are saying that they had the thing disassembled for defueling, and then you want to just sit there and say that they didn't. I mean, it's just ludicrous when you got a picture of the dome off of it. I mean, who? And then,
well,
just,
I didn't
you know,
see any date evidence
straight.
in your data. I never saw any date evidence. You know,
I am going to cut to the chase here. Israel wrote a virus that ended up at Fukushima. And I am going to go down this list here, and I don't know if you're going to be able to refute me on this or what you're going to say, because obviously you can look at things and not get it. Link number 20. Stuxnet is, if you click on link number 20, it brings you to an article about in the London Telegraph, Israeli security chief celebrates Stuxnet cyber attack. Now, this doesn't specifically state that Israel wrote Stuxnet, but if you go down to the next link, there's a video of them celebrating creating Stuxnet, right from their own, in one of their own military parties.
Okay.
And link
they're celebrating?
Also. Huh?
And they're celebrating this event?
No, that link is Israeli general boast offering Stuxnet virus.
Got it.
To give people a background on what Stuxnet is, it is a computer virus that goes into any system that controls fluids that has a Siemens, SCADA, control system. Now, I have confirmed that TEPCO had updated most of their facilities to SCADA. And given the fact that, that these reactor systems have completely passive cooling built into them where they don't need any electricity at all to keep themselves perfectly safe from blowing up.
Well, they need one battery to make the steam
they
turbine
do not.
Work.
No, they do not. When they
well,
those,
according
those
down, to Atomic Energy, let's see, I got an article here right from a trade publication that says that you've got to have at least one battery working
for,
to make
for
that thing
control,
work.
For control, yeah. But
Atomic Power Review.
If you want the thing to go, you know how a semi is set up. A semi is set up, its brakes are set up so that when the air lets off, the brakes engage. So as long as you got air pressure, you've got brakes. If you have an air pressure failure, the brakes lock and the truck comes to a stop. These valves actually have to be told to stay closed. Running mode means they're closed. If you de-energize these valves, they open, and then the system goes into a passive cooling mode. That they do have electric control, but they have to be told to shut to stay shut. If you lose all power, the system automatically goes into backup cooling mode. Why didn't
that's
this switch?
It's because assuming they got damaged, though. Right? That's
they're,
assuming
they're,
the pipes
okay.
didn't
the
get
hybrid,
damaged. And
Okay. You claim to be an expert on the subject. You at least know.
No, I'm a complete layman. But I'm a complete layman. But I just know what I read. And that's, you know, it was a pretty big earthquake.
The entire, let's get to the seismic record.
Yeah, let's
if
do.
You,
and where do we find that, Jim?
Link number 4, regional seismograms showing multiple epicenters, which lends credence to the quake not being real. If you look at this, on the top paragraph, it says a scale of measurement is denoted by these numbers. MYG looks, 004 looks like a smaller measurement. Anyway. The bottom line is that we had 3 quakes at the same time, and people are suspicious because of this that these quakes are artificially triggered, because when you get a normal earthquake, you have the same look from that earthquake in multiple seismic locations. You can furthermore, I really couldn't get into a groove here because you distracted me so much. But if you go down to MYG 11, you can see that this MYG 011 was closest to the epicenter, the supposed oceanic epicenter, and it's a much, much smaller seismic reading. We're talking a peak amplitude of about 700 on the same scale as the one that was actually inland, with a peak amplitude of 2,700. So we're not looking, the quake that they said triggered the tsunami out in the ocean actually, according to the seismic records, is proven to have originated about 100 miles inland. So something else had to create that tsunami, because it certainly wasn't an earthquake. The seismic records don't support it. The amplitudes aren't high enough. The epicenter's not in the right place. We have 3 separate epicenters located at the exact same time, which would indicate that the quake was artificially triggered. This is something that just can't be argued. If you look at, I have another link here, but normally I go through this in a sequence here. I got
just,
the actual.
Just take your time, Jim.
Okay. If you go to the actual article, gemstonefreelance.com/Fukushima.html, these charts come up and they're embedded in the page.
Okay.
If you click on link 6, it shows no damage as the tsunami rolls in. I did a bunch of frame captures from all the different videos, on YouTube where you can see that as a tsunami rolls in, it's hitting neighborhoods that were never touched by an earthquake. And I had one guy say, oh, well, you don't know anything about Japanese construction, and they use steel frame and everything else. And I went and I looked into it. No, they use wood frame, just like what I said. Here, and a lot of people, or at least the same heckler, said, well, they built their buildings to standards where they could survive the earthquake, and that's not true at all. In Sendai, that area was built to handle magnitudes in the 7s and not in the 8s and 9s because they don't have earthquakes that big there. And in Sendai, the damage report out of Sendai confirmed that not a single multi-story building or smaller occupied building had any leaning, and there were no collapses in Sendai. And if you go through Kobe, the Kobe pictures, which was a magnitude 6.8, there's fallen high rises and everything else that happened in Kobe.
Okay, now you're talking about a lot of pictures and stuff. Let's make certain that our listeners are following this. They are linked on Spingola.com. Just click on the radio schedule page because it's really important that you see the photos so that you understand. And most people are visual, so it's important that that you actually look at these things.
Okay, this would be link number
Can we back up here for a second? You were saying this link four, there were three separate earthquakes, right? But those quakes, I downloaded the data of KNET, and KNET gets their data from the Japanese Meteorological Agency, and those quakes all happened at the same time. I mean, how could there be three separate quakes if they happened at the same time?
Yes.
These are just different reporting stations.
Let's let Jim answer this.
The reason why they look different is because they're artificial. That's the only explanation. Somehow these quakes got triggered. And the way that they came up with their magnitude, their initial the episode, if you look at the bottom of the link seismogram page that I've got in Japan, they said that their initial measurement for this quake was a 6.8. The first measurement that ever got released in the press was a 7.8. And the way that they extrapolated that 7.8 was they took all three of these seismograms that are the first two are similar. They actually look like they're showing the same seismic event. But the one to the south near Tokyo is a completely different quake, and they ignored that. All these seismograms were off the exact same page and said to be the same quake from the same Japanese seismic center.
Okay,
and you're looking at it, and it looks like it doesn't match because it doesn't match. We have three separate quakes here.
Okay, and you're looking at link number four, right?
No, quake number three.
Okay, but you're
quake
looking at...
Quake number three is obviously a different seismic event. That is IBR-003 to the south.
Oh,
and
I see.
And yet these are all claimed to be the same quake.
Well, let me just ask you this. There are 1,000 monitors, earthquake monitors in Japan. And, I don't know anything about... I'm not a seismologist, and you aren't a seismologist. But we're just, trying to educate ourselves. So I'm trying to educate myself. So I don't know. The Earth has got all kinds of different densities of structure under the ground. There's no reason to think that in a different location you're going to have a different seismic signature. And the other thing is there were over 600. I think there were 693 monitors that reported back to Fukushima quake out of 20,000, and they had varying intensities. So, because you're looking at a coastal town and houses haven't got any, I mean, you're right. There's no cracks in any of those stucco houses, but that doesn't mean that somewhere else they didn't feel a bigger intensity somewhere, because it's all over.
Like I got the damage report out of Sendai that was right next to the epicenter is the closest major city, and not a single structure was destroyed. Not a single structure was leaning. They had about 70 get damaged, representing cracks and minor cosmetic damage. They had 9 that needed repairs before people occupied them, because like a church had a cracked steeple. But this is not what you get in a 9.0. They had a parking ramp collapse at a private grocery store, and that was the full extent of the highway damage. There were no collapsed bridges, which you will always get. In Kobe, this, the earthquake in Kobe, now some say it was a 7.2, some say it was a 6.9. It all depends upon how you calculate it. They had entire sections of elevated freeway come down. There's nothing like that in Sendai. And that alone is empirical evidence that this quake isn't what they said. And you couple that with my Japanese correspondent saying this quake isn't what they said, and what are you going to do? Are you going to just keep sitting there saying I don't have proof? I mean, how,
okay,
what are you trying?
Randall, let's go ahead and let Jim present his proof, and then we'll
right.
We will wait till the end, and if you have questions, we'll get to those then. Okay? Okay, Jim.
Oh, okay. I thought we were hitting commercial or something.
No,
okay.
In 3 minutes.
Now,
we have 3 minutes.
Now, the whole reason why I produced this page of charts is because it is showing that this isn't the same quake. And if the quake was real, it would have to be the same quake. No matter what seismogram you saw it on, you would at least see the two spikes. You'd at least see the two spikes. So the seismic event that they measured to the south was not the same thing that happened in the north. And all of these seismic events were coupled together to get their, at least their 7.8 reading, which they kept on upping and upping and upping to explain the tsunami to a 9.0, which is ridiculously higher than even a 7.8.
So the quake is not what we were told that it was.
We were not told. The Japanese correspondent said it was very strong where he was, but there's no way that it was 100 times stronger than what happened in Kobe. And that would make sense. I mean, and even when you're talking quakes that are so close, a 6.8, 6.9, a 7 or whatever, where you are on the ground is going to affect what you feel. And so one guy may be in a 6.8 and say it was horrible, and another guy may be in a 6.8 and say he didn't feel a whole lot. But when you've got coastal cities with no damage, we've got Sendai with no damage or very little damage, no collapsed high-rises or anything like that, we've got cities of the south with no damage as the quake rolls in. These frame captures of the tsunami rolling in are from all different regions. And if you go to the link page, we have a video. I have linked a video of the NHK Sendai newsroom during the quake. This is the broadcast that came out of the newsroom during the quake. And at the end of this broadcast, most of the stuff is still on the desk. A laser printer is still sitting on a table. You know, it got moved a little because it got shaken. You don't have a situation like that at the end of a 9.0. I mean, the laser printer would have been embedded on a wall somewhere or under a desk, you know, forgotten if underneath, you know, three stories of collapsed rubble. You don't have laser printers and files and people typing on their computer during a 9.0. It just doesn't work that way.
Sure.
If you watch that
okay.
video, you'll be able to see that this was not a 9.0.
Okay. And those are, if you just scroll down on the page, on Jim's page, which is linked, you will see what he's talking about, the pictures. There's a couple of graphs there, and you can see the printer, the laser printer, which is just still on the desk. So it's very interesting. Okay, continue.
Okay. Now, I never believed that we could trigger quake. And I was like, you know, I figured that either Japan got, or either Israel smuggled nukes into lava tubes, or Japan was doing nuclear testing, because I kind of figured that they were onto their own nuclear weapons program, and Israel used it as a startup clock. But if you click on link 16, it's military briefing with Secretary of Defense William Cohen.
Hold that thought. We do have to take our 3-minute break. We will be right back, and you can tell us about Cohen. Stay tuned. Welcome back, friends. My guest today is Jim Stone, and Randall Tillotson is co-hosting with me. And, Jim, you were talking about a Mr. Cohen. So please pick up where you left off.
Very briefing on April 28, 1997, where Cohen was speaking, and he said, others are engaging even in the eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes and volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. So there are plenty of ingenious minds out there that are at work finding ways which they can wreak terror upon other nations. It's real, and that's the reason why we have to intensify our efforts, and that's why this is so important. And left unsaid by William Cohen is that such systems would be developed by DARPA first and owned by America first. And so it's like it's the pot calling the kettle black, basically. And with this briefing having happened in 1997, one could assume, and I have no proof, and I can't prove it, but I would assume, and empirical evidence would suggest that the systems now are better than what he was talking about, because technology advances, even though I have no proof of that. But anybody who can think probably would conclude that that would be the case.
Sure.
So with my Japanese correspondent saying that these quakes are not natural and they're very fishy, the aftershocks are fishy. He felt a very strange earthquake the day before, a couple days before. Why are they all occurring at 10 kilometers depth? You know, maybe that's how deep the weapon reaches. But it lends very, and him talking about the sky getting chemtrails at the time of these quakes, it really, you know, the chemtrails would be a doping agent or something, at least I suspect they would be, to assist in the functioning of energy coupling with the ground, with whatever weapon you're going to use. At least I have a write-up on HAARP that explains that. And prior to when I did the write-up on HAARP, I didn't believe that they could trigger earthquakes. This is something I stumbled across because one of my readers said it to me in an email. I didn't believe it. But I'm not going to argue with the Secretary of Defense. I had to include this as a scenario. So,
okay.
And it makes the most sense because it gets rid of all the complications with trying to get nukes under the ground to set them off. That's a pretty tough thing to do. So.
All right. Now, as you scroll down on your page, you can see that you have the tsunami pictures and the buildings, which definitely do not seem to have any damage to them before the tsunami comes in.
Well, even on top of that, when you look at the cars in the parking lot, they're all sitting there straight and square. A 9.0
exactly.
Moves cars. You don't have cars parked perfectly at a 9.0. Another point is why weren't people running? I had a writer write in, a heckler. I've only had one heckler. The heckler really raised a lot of subjects. He said, well, in Japan, they have those tsunami warnings all the time, and they just sit in their chairs because they're so sick of them. And I guess, well, yeah, that would be true, but I think that they would know the difference between a 9.0 and a 3.0. You know, they'll set up a tsunami warning for a 3.0. A 9.0 would be enough to really get attention, and people probably would say, this is probably a real tsunami warning. We're going to evacuate. And yet all the cars are sitting there, all pretty. People are in the store shopping, at work, whatever. Nobody's running. Nobody's panicking. And the tsunami just comes in and wipes out clean cities where everything is in order. It doesn't make any sense. It's just
sure. Absolute
nonsense.
Okay,
so,
Jim, we do have to go to a top-of-the-hour break for one
okay. Minute.
We will come back, and then let's talk about the nuclear hostage situation that you imply. And we will be right back in 1 minute. Stay tuned. Welcome to the second hour of Spingola Speaks. This is Deanna Spingola. Today, Randall Tillotson is co-hosting with me, and our guest is Jim Stone. Jim's website is jimstonefreelance.com. He has written an article about the Fukushima tsunami and earthquake, and it is entitled, Did the Dimona Dozen Murder the Fukushima 50? And you can go to his website. It is linked on the radio schedule page. We will take calls after my guest has presented his information when we open the phone lines in this hour at 800-313-9443. I really want to let him have an opportunity to present his information before we take calls and questions. Okay, if you go down on your page underneath the graphs and things, you want to present something that you, with number one, you say, I honestly believe Japan is being held a nuclear hostage. It all makes sense.
Yes.
Okay, address that.
We have a quake that doesn't support a tsunami. That's number one. When you look at the evidence, when you look at the seismic records, it just doesn't make any sense. What, there was a quake, but it happened inland, not out on the ocean. We don't have the damage to support the 9.0 theory. So where did this tsunami come from? Number two, we have a security company that that came into to Fukushima 4 months after Japan offered to enrich uranium for Iran. And, I mean, the sequence is just too obvious. They came out of where Stuxnet was written. They came out of where the nuclear weapons are made. It all makes – they showed up with a camera that was grossly oversized. It doesn't make any sense to show up with a camera like that. Other stereoscopic cameras that other companies have that would have been installed in an area the size, you know, in a reactor's containment are only about twice the size of a regular monocular camera. I'm talking, you know, the size of a laptop at max. We're not, this thing is some giant thing. And it does. So, with it being grossly oversized and looking just like a gun-type nuke, it doesn't make any sense anyway, it's very, okay, let's just say it's suspicious. We had an explosion at reactor 3 that very much resembled a nuclear weapons test. The prompt criticalities that people are speaking of would have kicked off steam explosions, not nuclear class, nuclear type explosions. There's a lot of empirical evidence here. You just have to look at it and think. You cannot, nobody is going to give you the document saying that Magna VSP brought a nuke in there. You're never going to be able to get that. So you have to find other ways to prove it. You got to get the empirical evidence. You got to show what they had, give the reason, and draw a conclusion. You can't just, anyway. So the scenario is this. Japan offers to enrich uranium for Israel's great state in Iran. Immediately, Israel sets off front companies masquerading as security companies, and one of them succeeds in getting a security contract at a Japanese nuclear facility. 4 months later, the Dimona dozen shows up, and they have about 12 employees. That's why I call it the Dimona dozen.
Oh, okay. And this is and the security company?
Yeah, the Israeli security company, yeah.
Okay.
And under the cover of security contract, it's unlimited access to the heart of Fukushima. They plant the virus, install real cameras outside of the facility, and functional, poorly disguised nuke cameras inside the facility. In addition to this, they install an unauthorized data connection to allow control of all the guests of the facility via the virus. And that is actually was written in the Jerusalem Post. I've got the link to that in the article. Down below.
We do have to take another 3-minute break. We will be right back. So hold that thought. Welcome back, friends. Welcome back. Our guest today is Jim Stone. His website is jimstonefreelance.com. And we will take calls after our guest has presented his information when we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. I know it's kind of disruptive to not allow a person to present their information. So continue. You were talking about a Jerusalem newspaper.
Yeah, the Jerusalem Post. That link would be on a link page. I have to open that but it's also further down in the article. I'll just summarize the article. It basically said that this security team succeeded in getting a full-time data connection to their cameras that were inside the reactor containment. Well, if you've got a full-time data link to a reactor containment, that's never permitted under any circumstance, which means that I don't have TEPCO saying that they didn't permit that, but they wouldn't have permitted that. That's just the bottom line. You don't have internet connections going into a reactor's containment. That's just the way it is. And the Jerusalem Post specifically states that the Israelis maintained that connection all the way through the disaster, but, quote, they didn't use it because they didn't have permission. That doesn't make any sense. A Okay, so we've got first of all, it wouldn't have ever been authorized. Second of all, it's hard to believe that they wouldn't have used it. Why wouldn't TEPCO, if they knew about it, ask them, can we please see your camera that's filming this reactor that's in trouble? We don't have anybody in there. We can't get them in there. The radiation's too much. Please switch on your camera and let us see. If they really were there with a legitimate data link to that camera, TEPCO would have been all over it and asking them, please give us feedback, and they never did.
You know, I can't understand why Japan would allow Israeli people in anyway if they were, in fact, enriching uranium for Iran.
Make any sense, but, you know, it has to have something to do with Japanese culture. They don't think the same way we do. I have a hunch from the Japanese people that I know that they tend to be more trusting and less suspicious and more open and things like that than we are. And they may not have seen it the same way. So I'm gonna read the scenario here and then we'll get to the solve. Immediately Israel sets up front companies masquerading as security companies. It's very suspicious that 4 months after Japan offers to enrich uranium for Iran that an Israeli security company from Dimona gets into Fukushima. It doesn't make any sense. With Dimona being a military base, it's really suspicious. After installing Stuxnet and the nukes they spray on, that's point three, Israel waits for one of the many natural quakes in Japan to provide cover for a tsunami bomb, and they already have it at the bottom of the Japan Trench. Now, this is before I read Cohen's article that said they could have triggered it, artificially. New evidence shows that the quake most likely was natural. VLF communications are established with a bomb to penetrate the water. David and Dimona get seismic readings for Japan, 6.67 in progress, boom. Tsunami comes in, swamps Stuxnet-infected power plant, and direct video feed from legitimate camera security company installed gets to Dimona via totally unauthorized channel, and David knows just when to cut the generators off. Others on the team do all they can to counteract measures taken by the employees of Fukushima who are unaware that an attack is taking place and do not understand why everything is going crazy. That is how Stuxnet is designed to work. And it has been confirmed that Stuxnet does have a remote link option, and that's in the link further below on the article. Israeli Prime Minister calls Japan and says, take that for offering to help Iran. And you know, there are 5 more nukes in the ocean off the coast of Japan, and we are going to set those off and destroy your coastal cities if you do not forget that 6.67. and say it was a 9 to cover for tsunami effect. And now we are going to make your people demand you move away from nuclear power so you can never threaten us like that again. We're blowing up Fukushima Daiichi, and you're just going to go along with whatever story we tell you to.
Now, where did that come from?
That's just something, that's just an extrapolated scene that basically, it's the scenario. If they're going to set off a tsunami, which obviously is very suspicious because you don't have the building damage to support it, and you don't have the seismic records to support it.
Okay.
Where did the tsunami come from?
Okay, so
it wasn't natural.
So that's just your thoughts. That's just your conclusions.
It's just my thoughts. This is a scenario of what I think probably happened. You see, Japan, there has to be a reason why Japan is being silent about what went on. There has to be a reason why they're silent about this 9.0 and not screaming to the world that there was no 9.0. You know, they don't have the structural damage to prove it. The people there don't think it was real. Why aren't we hearing that in our press? And it's because the reason obviously is because they're being forced not to say anything. At least that's what I believe to be the case.
Okay.
David and his pals close all the valves to the reactors via the remote data link they admitted to installing, and put them full throttle to melt them down while a virus keeps control room readouts displaying false info like nothing is going on, even though the place is coming apart. And this would explain why they melted down so fast, according to Arne Gunderson, which I think, you know, the meltdowns are real. They did happen. You know, if they melted down 3 hours after power was lost, well, that's actually fairly hard to accomplish. They don't just go into idle mode, but they actually did. They were in idle mode for with all going well before the tsunami came in for a period of 45 minutes, which means that the really, really big burst of energy, because they scrambled the earthquake yet. They automatically shut off. They were not running those things when the tsunami came in. They take about 3 hours to get to a safe position where they won't, or it's hard to melt them down. They're only an hour into the cool down, but still, to have them melt down so rapidly afterwards, I think that they got turned back on, and all the valves were closed off. So scenario six is David and his pals close all the valves to the reactors via the remote data link they admitted to installing, and put them full throttle to melt them down while the virus kept control room readouts displaying false info like nothing is going on. And even if the quake was real, there are nukes that can reach an 8.4. Well, there was no 8.4 even, but the Tsar Bomba in Russia tested out at an 8.4, and it was only at half power. They didn't want to really do the full power version. It was an airburst, which shook the ground with a force of a 7.2. But whenever they calculate seismic yields of nuclear weapons, it's assuming that weapon is buried. So that's where they get the calculation for 6.4 from the Tsar Bomba. Even if the quake was real, there are nukes that can reach an 8.4 close enough. So I have yet to work out the final details. I probably have enough to hang them because I got the real seismic data that proves beyond a doubt the quake is not what we were told and was in fact an inland 6.8 calculated higher than the seismogram due to the triangulated true epicenter being a little higher, which would get noticed but not feared in quake-ridden Japan, hence no buildings falling in Sendai. Japan really did offer to enrich uranium for Iran, and Israel has been documented to have attempted to destroy the reactor in Iran, and probably did, and they wiped out the centrifuges there too. Japan contributing to Iran's nuclear future would make them just as much an enemy to Israel as Iran. Israel would want them taken out. It is documented that a team from Israel with a history consisting only of working in Israeli defense got unlimited access to a Japanese nuclear facility, which then went boom. Reactor 4 had been defueled and proven disassembled, and therefore no explosion there was possible. What should have happened at Reactor 4, if anything at all? The fuel pool should have melted down and caught fire once the water boiled off from a lack of recirculation, at worst, and badly contaminated the containment structure, nothing else. No explosions, nothing else. Reactor 4 is Building 7 on 9/11, period. Why did an explosion there happen that was so severe it blew the outer containment walls 4 feet thick and inner containment walls that were much thicker? Reactor 4 is reportedly now in danger of falling over. How? It actually blew the inner containment of Reactor 4. How did that happen? In other words, I think they got more than one nuke into this facility. Reactor 4 didn't go off as bad because it wasn't in an overheated condition when the nuke, this is empirical evidence. I don't have any documents saying that it's obvious. The Japanese government is going along with a story of a scientifically proven false 9.0. There is a reason, and my guess is that Israel has made threats to wipe out Japanese coastal cities with additional tsunamis if the government of Japan speaks the word of what went on. There should be no reason for Japan to go along with this other than a continued threat. So that's my case. Is it not interesting this quake reportedly happened in the bottom of the Japan Trench, which would be perfect for hiding an atomic bomb blast?
But how did they get, if there are nukes buried offshore, doesn't Japan have some sort of security along their coast that would prevent people from doing that? Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know,
caused a tsunami?
That gets into a gray area because you got cargo ships going in and out. You've got yachts that could carry a nuke. There is a guy named Joe Vial that did a really, really good write up, and I didn't really reference his work on the Sumatran explosion and how that produced the tsunami of a 9.0 when the real seismic reading was a 6.4. And I remember that very specifically. The seismic readings out of there were a 6.4. How on earth did they get the tsunami worthy of a 9.0? And with the Sumatra nuke, and I don't have these references. I'm just saying, you know, from what I know.
Sure.
India first said that it was a nuclear weapon that triggered the Sumatra tsunami. They picked up the EMP. They picked up the seismic reading, and they said, they announced in the newspapers that, that it was a nuclear weapon that did it. And that's
okay.
A lot worse.
We do have to take another three-minute break. We will be right back afterward from our sponsors, and then we'll take some phone calls. Welcome back, friends. Our guest today is Jim Stone, and Randall Tillotson is co-hosting with me, although I've been doing most of the talking like a regular woman, right? That's what we do. okay, we do have a couple callers on hold here. Let's take Jeff in Idaho. Jeff, welcome to the program. You have some questions for Jim.
Hi, Jim. Yeah, hi, Deanna. Thank you. I wanted to quote two references. I've been studying this stuff for 7 or 8 years and have a background that I want to highlight in a second. But one website is called deepblacklies.co.uk.
Oh, okay, I got to write that.
Yeah, doom_weapons_1.htm.
Okay, okay, can you send me those links to James at jimstonefreelance.com?
Right, right, yeah. And
okay.
The other thing is from Lieutenant Colonel Bearden's website, chenierre.org, is his book, Spear to Lance. And I want to quote from 5 or 6 pages that have photographs of things that weapons that can create tsunamis from electromagnetic magnetic wave interactions, like Secretary of Defense Cohen quoted in 97. Okay? On page 63.
Now, these aren't going to be very long, are they, Jeff?
No, no. On page 73, you'll see a nuclear weapons detonation underwater from 11 April 1963, okay? On page 133, you'll find out how nuclear material can be blown up from a distance. Page 253, you can see explosive events on a Soviet island, on Bennett Island, that are 150 miles long. And on page 214, it explains how scalar electromagnetic waves absorbed and it can increase the mass of the nucleus. Okay. Lieutenant Colonel Bearden has studied for, since the World War II events of the Germans developing super weapons, how electromagnetic waves can create weather problems and then can create temperature excursions high or low and create nuclear type explosions without any material. Okay. In 1995, the Shinriki, which was a cult that basically did the subway gassing with sarin gas, the sarin gas activities. I was involved with a company next to Lawrence Livermore in 1995, and this cult was trying to buy one of the most powerful YAG lasers that we had in North America. And in these 1995 quotes, the Kobe earthquake was predicted 9 days before the event, and it said Japan will be attacked by an earthquake in 1995. And Haido Murillo, who was a...
And that was a shallow earthquake, just like what
right,
the Japanese
right,
correspondent
right.
is saying. That makes sense, okay?
Right. And if you study the work by the Colorado School of Mines in the 1990s, there's an article called The Irresistible Miner. Okay, mechanical jackhammers can only do so much mechanical force at the point, but lasers can introduce 10 or 20 times more mechanical force by resonance. And what this over 200 IQ weapons expert did is he used mechanical resonance like Tesla was doing and basically set this thing up, but he was using a laser and put it into a scalar longitudinal mode, and the energy kept building as it would pulse every time, and he used the Earth's energy as the source to pick up the rest of the energy. So I agree with the statements you're saying, and what you see when you look at the explosion of the reactor, you see pentavalent and trivalent, I think, plutonium dust is the color
yeah.
of the explosion. And so what that, if you compare the, okay, when you have a nuclear type event, you produce 1.2 million feet per second velocities, okay? And that'll strip rebar, just like in the photos that you
yeah,
saw.
Yeah, just like I said, yeah, the hydrogen, I never even got into that because I was
right,
too distracted.
Right. Okay, so when you look, when you compare the blast that occurred, the photos of Chernobyl and the blast of this thing, you'll find it discussed in this book, A Fear to Lance. It's about $50, and it goes into how the Chernobyl reactor basically went off. But you're going to see the same sort of destruction at that location in this and the photos that I've looked at on your website, and that's explained in this book, and it's all about a briefing on Soviet scalar electromagnetic weapons. So I understand the gun type device, but you could actually do this remotely with. The,
yeah, yeah, I agree with you. Right. That is plausible. Right. I had a lot of people saying that the tsunami was likely created by a scalar weapon. You know,
right.
I can't argue that. I cannot come up with a seismogram out of that trench that shows anything happened there at all. It's like a seismically dead zone all the way through this earthquake, with everything going into it and nothing coming out of it. And if a nuke went off out there, you would expect there to be at least have been a seismic reading coming from where the nuke went off.
Right. Well, here on page 248 of that book, basically it explains at 5:14 p.m. Standard Time on April 9th, 1984, a giant mushroom cloud erupted above the ocean of the South Kuril Islands. The mushroom cloud rose rapidly, expanded as it rose. In 2 minutes, it had reached an altitude of 60,000 feet and a diameter of 200 miles. Okay, this was reported by a 747 pilot that used to be a B-52 pilot. The guy swerved, did a dive maneuver when he saw the mushroom cloud, to avoid fallout.
Yeah, well, if they did use a tsunami nuke, it would have been buried so far into the water that it wouldn't have reached the surface.
Right. Well,
that trench is really, really deep.
You don't have to have a nuke to do those, and you can get much higher power release, you know, even more than the Russian bomba that you were talking about, you know, the 50 megaton
okay.
that occurred in, like, 62.
Right.
Right.
Okay, that's all I have.
Okay, well, thanks for the call.
Jeff.
That was very, very good stuff.
Yeah. Listen to the archives to get that information. Thanks, bye.
Okay.
Bye. Thanks, Jeff. Okay, we do have to take another 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Stay tuned. Our guest today is Jim Stone. His website is jimstonefreelance.com, jimstonefreelance.com. And Randall Tillotson is co-hosting with me. We do have another caller, and we also have some email questions and comments. Let's take Liz in Arkansas. Liz, welcome to the program.
Anna, you have the best intelligent show on the airwaves.
Well, thank you.
Jim, earlier you were talking about Reactor 3. I don't have a computer, but you said it vanished into a hole. Is that correct? I can't see the picture.
Yes, the way the facility is built, there's an open space under the reactor.
Okay.
Which means that just because it's not showing in the picture doesn't mean it's not on site. It could have just fallen down into the open space below it.
Well, are you familiar with Dr. Judy Wood?
No, I am not.
Well, you might want to check on her website because when she looks at the empirical evidence of 9/11, it's 9/11, she's saying vanished, and then there was a big hole.
What that's based on is that there's a new method of destroying extremely large structures, or a new wartime method,
right,
where you set
off
a nuclear detonation under that structure and it falls into the cavity created.
You might want to check with Dr. Judy Wood because all her evidence show the same thing, and she's the only one that's saying that the building just disappeared, and I believe that's what you said earlier.
And it did. There wasn't enough rubble on the surface left over.
It was 9/11, and she's done a book and extensive research and has taken a lot of criticism, kind of like you have been today. But check her website, Dr. Judy Wood, and it's very similar. You guys are parallel what you're saying about how the pictures are showing a different evidence to what they're saying.
She's
awesome. Yeah, and she's very intelligent, and I believe that is her job, is to look at physical evidence and analyze the from there. Okay?
But can I say something about that? That's what
Randy.
I was doing with this. I was looking at the evidence, and if evidence is evidence, then it'll stand up in a court case.
Did take it to court and it got thrown out. She took it all the way to the court.
Well, actually took it to court and then went to the Supreme Court on her lawsuit against the NIST contractors defrauding the government. And the Supreme Court ruled that the law was correct and that they were going to ignore it in her case. So she had a legal case and the court recognized it. And that's right in the court record.
All I'm saying is I was going to take a nap, but I started listening to Deanna. I couldn't sleep. I'd taken notes, Everything Jim has said is the same as Dr. Judy Wood's saying about 9/11. It's parallel.
There's a couple of differences.
Okay.
Dr. Wood does not say that nuclear weapons were buried.
No.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's a big difference.
But other evidence is saying there was explosions. So,
right.
And Israel.
Well, yeah, the camera shake video showing that a big explosion happened before the building fell.
But you might
want to. Everybody's wondering.
Just go on our website and you start looking, and then you're going to go, oh my God, I got to talk to this lady. That's what I think. If you want to dig deeper. And I thank you for all your hard work and bringing it to the light. And thank you, Deanna, for having the most intelligent show on the airwaves.
Thank
I love
you,
you,
Liz.
I listen to you every day.
Thank you.
First time I called. But have a great day, everybody. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Okay, we do have a couple of email comments. One from Tom in Sweden, and he says, orange fumes from MOX Reactor 3 equal plutonium explosion, not a hydrogen explosion. Hydrogen fumes are clear, not orange. Your comment.
Yes, this makes perfect sense. I've looked into that, and basically it makes sense because I didn't really go on the color of the explosion. I went on the blast characteristics. And if you had a hydrogen explosion in that reactor or in that containment, first of all, it wouldn't have been able to blow it apart. But if it did blow it apart, the velocities that hydrogen explosions can reach would have blown it apart in chunks. It would not have atomized the concrete. And what happened is at all three of the reactors that had suffered explosions, is we have atomized concrete dust everywhere and rebar that is stripped perfectly clean. That is what happens when you set off a nuke. Even a C4 blast would have a real hard time accomplishing that. If you had packed the place with C4, you probably could have blown it apart if you brought in, 80,000 pounds, 100,000 pounds. Reactors and their containments are not some small thing you're going to take apart with your standard charges. And so how do you get an explosion out of there with a blast characteristic of a nuke? I mean, that's another thing. That's a whole subject that I didn't touch. The blast characteristics are completely wrong. They don't match the story. The color, as this commenter, the color of the blast indicates that a large amount of plutonium got released. Reactor 3 was a mock reactor that did use a plutonium-rich fuel. Either we got a major reactor breach or the fuel pools got blown away and that plutonium got spread out. It's all speculation because you cannot go in there and actually look at it. The only thing you can do is look at the empirical evidence on the outside that shows that we have not been told the truth.
Right. Thomas also said that Stutnex was found in Japan in November 2010.
Yes, that's another link in my article. That I never got to. If you go through the link, all that stuff is linked on the link page. Yes, Japan.
Well, it was found on 63 personal computers. That doesn't mean that it was injected into any commercial enterprises.
Yes.
Then how many Stutnex are in people's computers in this country?
It's very suspicious that it showed up at the same time the security team from Mega BSP arrived. That's very suspicious. The thing spreads via flash drives. It doesn't make any sense that's another piece of empirical evidence. You're not going to get an article anywhere that's going to say that Israel brought this in and planted it. You're never going to get that. So,
well, how many Stutnex are on PCs in this country?
Well, it has spread a fair amount now. The numbers are not really known. It could even be on my PC. I've thought about that. I've already thought that if I ever do any TLC work with a Siemens controller that I'm going to buy a brand new laptop and never, ever, 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 ever use anything that's ever been on the web or had anything unclean put in it, because the Stuxnet thing is nasty. I mean, it could blow up an oil refinery. It could, by diverting fluids the wrong way. It can destroy a reactor by closing valves. They had switch gear that was in perfect condition, but it wouldn't switch on because the controller wouldn't let it switch on. They brought in off-site generators and hooked them up to Fukushima's electrical grid before anything went awry. They managed to get off-site generators driven in to the facility, and they were not allowed to hook them up. They made their terminations, and the switchgear would not activate. It was shut off from the controller, and they could not. They couldn't get it
well,
activated.
Well, that's just speculation. You don't know.
No,
what,
it is
you
not.
Don't know
that what. That was published by the World Nuclear Association, and it's linked on my site. Don't tell me that everything is speculation.
Well, they've got to be speculating because nobody can get in there.
The only thing, no, they did know that. The World Nuclear Association did a line-by-line event, and it's linked on my website, and they specifically stated 8 hours after the tsunami hit, the generators were driven into the facility from off-site and hooked up, and they were not allowed to hook up by the controller. They could not get power in, even though it was there on site. All this stuff is in there. You can say all you want that I haven't documented my stuff. There is one thing I didn't document. Get an admission from Magna BSP that was a nuke. That's one thing. Yeah, I admit. I can't prove that thing weighs 100 pounds, but it does look like a gun-type nuclear weapon, and it clearly doesn't have to have a camera look like that.
Okay, another question.
But the rest of this stuff, you're going nowhere.
Okay, let's take another question from email. She's got two questions for Melanie. Were there any military exercises going on in the Pacific near Japan prior to the earthquake and tsunami?
Yes, the U.S. Navy was off the coast of Japan. I forgot the name of the battle fleet or whatever that was out there. But there were a fair number of large U.S. ships. I didn't really get what the complement was. I don't know. But I believe that it was an aircraft carrier and they, like a destroyer and a battleship, whatever would accompany an aircraft carrier. But yes,
okay.
The U.S. Pacific Fleet was off that coast of Japan at the exact time that the tsunami and earthquake happened. And I had writers write into me saying that this is suspicious because they could have had the EM weaponry based on those ships and done it right from there. Now, I didn't look into that, but yes, I have heard of that.
Okay. Her second question, did Japan not follow instructions or fall in line with the international banking cartels like the Fed or the WTO or the IMF?
Okay. I have another, I have a fair answer for that. Japan, for some reason, and I didn't get the details on it, got extorted out of something like 50 trillion yen that they had to pay to the international bankers after the Fukushima disaster. Well, it all kind of happened in a sequence. And so there was a big payoff, and that ties into we're going to blow you up or set off a nuke if you don't give us the money. I don't think that Japan owed any money. But all of a sudden this big payout went out, and that's really, really suspicious. I mean, it was like our banker bailout. It was that big. And, you know, because Japan's got a really big economy. They can support a huge cash payout. And it did happen. And the events surrounding that payout are very suspicious. I've had a lot of email writers write into me and say, this is very suspicious. Why did this happen? And, you know, I have such a sea of information. I'm only one man. I can't really go into and look into it at all. So really the only thing I can do is quote and say what people have sent me on a lot of this stuff.
Okay. Another comment from Dave in Idaho. He says, and I will quote him exactly, I am sorry, but this guy you have on has no empirical evidence for a jack thing he is talking about. I do not think these poor people decided to kill the entire north of their country. The quacks will not be linear. We do need to pay attention to the larger picture. If he has ever been around a steam turbine, he will know how you have a blowout, unquote. Your comment.
Well, I have no comment because he obviously didn't read the site. You know, we have buildings with no quake damage. We have rebar stripped off of concrete. We have reactors exploded that disassembled. He's claiming that I have no evidence when the site is just loaded with it. It is all over the place. I've got the seismograms. And so I can't answer that because it's a question that just doesn't have any merit. What do I say? You know, he's
sure.
saying I didn't don't have any evidence, and that the site is just stacked with facts, and that's what everybody says. It is stacked with facts. You have rocked my world. You have changed my perception. The world is not the same thing I saw it before. Very little to pick apart on your article, but I think an EM weapon was used instead. Those are the types of comments I get, not that you have no evidence. I had one heckler saying I have no evidence, and then it's a long story, but every single thing that he was saying was wrong. He said that Japan doesn't use wood frame housing. I looked into that. They do. He said that they use a steel studs. He said that the earthquake knocked everything over, and you can go right through it and get the reports out of Japan from people that live there saying that nothing fell down. And it's just, so you're going to get these people. No matter what, you're going to get these people that either don't look at the facts and then call in and claim you have nothing, or look at the facts and then deny it because it's either an agenda or something else there, you know, for whatever reason.
All righty. Another question from Thomas. It was exactly 1 year, or comment actually, it was exactly 1 year Japan time since Japan endorsed a major UN paper against Israel.
Oh, really? That's a new piece. You see, if you're listening, can you please send me that, James at jimstonefreelance.com? One thing that I failed to say, at the beginning of this was that when I wrote this article, it was somewhat sparse. It was fairly well documented. It was somewhat sparse. All the meat of this article and this topic, the really, really big stuff, has come from people sending me tips, just like what are coming in right now. I have loads and loads and loads of stuff to go through, and I cannot incorporate it all because I just cannot process that much data. But the bottom line is that there's a real public sentiment that I have nailed it, and everyone is sending me support. It's coming in from everywhere. And I've had one heckler in the email and one heckler on the phone today. You're going to get – he's probably the guy that sent me the email that said that, you know, everything was – anyway, it's a long story, but I just can't process that much data. So,
okay.
At least not in a week or a month, I'll tell you that much.
Sure. Now your proposition, you are proposing that it was a nuclear attack, that they planted nuclear weapons in this facility, and that is what caused the problem. Could it have been some other thing that you have not decided, that you have no knowledge of? Could it be?
Well, it could be the scale energy. Of what, you know, possibly, but, you know, all I can say is I got a picture of a gun-type nuke. Now, the co-host is saying that I didn't get a picture of a gun-type nuke and that I didn't prove anything. But if you look at that, what on earth security company brings in a product that looks like that? First of all, the thing is ugly. That is not a finished product. It looks like it came out of something where a bunch of people hocked it together for a purpose to get a job done. It doesn't look like it's any kind of a product that you get from a real company. Characteristics match a nuke, and we got something that looks like a nuke and it quacks like a nuke and it came from a nuclear facility. Well, I think we got a nuke. You know, maybe a scalar weapon, maybe this, maybe that. But what I've got really supports that a nuke was brought in.
All righty. You said that you that you previously worked for the government. How do we know that you're not still working for the government?
that was over with in 1989. That's old history. And if I was working for the government, I'd be on the side of CNN and Fox and ABC that shill out to this government endlessly and pump up things for phony wars so the Pentagon can go out and blow things up. And it doesn't make any sense. What I am saying, you know, this government and our military is controlled by Israel. They're not going to come out with some psyop that says that Israel did Fukushima. So I think that pretty clearly indicates that I don't work.
Hold on. We do have to take another 3-minute break. We'll be right back. All righty. Welcome back, friends. Today, Randall Tillotson has been co-hosting with me, and our guest has been Jim Stone. Jim's website is jimstonefreelance.com. And you were saying that if you were actually working for the government, that you would be on CNN. You certainly wouldn't be on the alternative news media unless, of course, you were trying to disseminate information to to say what happened.
If you're asking if I have any classified sources, no, I am disconnected from the community. This is just the result of a very, very intense investigation. I spent hundreds of hours on this. This didn't just spring together in an evening. It was a very, very long and hard process going through this. I neglected everything and neglected work, and it's just really been a long haul.
Sure. Now I noticed.
Could you tell us if that's your real name? Is that Jim Stone?
Jim Stone is not my real name. It's not my real name. That's a stage name. It's a long story. That's a public presence name. I will not give out my real name.
All righty. Now I noticed that Mike Adams picked up your story, or at least one of his staff writers picked it up on naturalnews.com. Ethan
Pinkoff. Okay.
Picked it up and talked about it and said an actual 9.0 mega quake would have leveled the whole country of Japan. Have other
websites? Yes,
that's
another point that I didn't get onto. I have a link, at least I should have a link, unless it vanished, because I've rewritten this article so much, and I do by code entry. I don't have like a web processor. I just use a computer code entry. It's a long story. I know the code well enough. So I don't use like front page or something like that. And so sometimes I'll lose a link. But I had a link there to the effect of what a 9.0 really should do. If we had a 9.0 earthquake in Japan, it would have destroyed everything. I am talking Sendai should be a rubble pile. All the cities surrounding it should be very severely damaged. We should have had bridges down in Tokyo. A 9.0 is not something to sniff at. You know, people look at these numbers on the seismic charts and they say, well, it's an 8.0 and a 9.0. Well, that's only, you know, it's 7.0, 9.0. That should be three times, No. It's over 100-fold different.
Okay.
And
we do have one more call, Lee
right.
in Georgia, and you have to make it quick because we have 1 minute. So one question, Lee.
Okay, real quick. All those hecklers, don't worry about them. I'm going to reserve my decision until after I've had a chance to either verify or debunk what you have on your website.
Good.
It is interesting, but I've been called an agent provocateur before, too, because of things I've said, so don't let that sweat you. But, folks, don't go be just discrediting what people say until you actually research what they said.
Okay, Lee, your time's up. Thanks for calling. All right.
Okay.
We have about 20 seconds. Would you like to make some conclusions? I'm still not sold about the camera.
The camera is the only thing, but you look at the rest of the evidence on the site. Nobody's going to tell you that there is a nuke in that camera. You just got to look at it and think. It's certainly, obviously, not your normal video camera, I'll tell you that much. And basically, I'm happy you had me on the air, and thank you for letting me speak. That's a little bit of a rough ride, but looks like I got through it.
Hey, you're tough. You can handle it. Thank you very much for being on the program.
All right.
And take care. Thanks, Jim. And thank you, Randall.
Yeah.
Bye-bye, listeners. Talk to you tomorrow.